definitely not a good time to be a Nazi. Hello and welcome to Ribbon of Eames? Ribbon of Memes, not Eames. What is an Eame? Never mind. That's not what we're discussing today. Today we are discussing further satirical Hitler films. I am Nick and I am joined as ever by Roger.
Hello.
And we, following on from our previous episode, 158, where we discussed The Great Dictator and The Producers, two films which feature a extremely unflattering version of Adolf Hitler, we're going to do a couple more as we move forward into an uncertain future. Oh, sorry, I've thought about the real world again. That's always a mistake. So
more beer. Let's...
Thank you. Let's move on. Following... chronologically, we have advanced. We moved forward to 1967 last time with The Producers. We're now jumping ahead 48 years to a German language film, Look Who's Back. What's that in German?
Er ist wieder da, which is more or less like, he's back again.
He's back, yes, yeah. So this is based on a best-selling book in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
The one-line elevator pitch is Hitler comes back, and it's 2015. We sort of start the film with Adolf Hitler finding himself on the spot of ground where his bunker was in Berlin. Except it's not 1945 anymore, it's now 2015. And he is just as he was, facing the modern world.
Well, apart from the drug addiction, but let's not talk about that.
Well, yes, okay. He's not quite as he was. He's less dead, for one thing. So he tries to navigate the modern world. And what follows is kind of a combination of... a docudrama style. Here's what would happen when Hitler was trying. At first, he's ridiculed, and then he's put on TV a la network, and also a mixture of kind of Borat style. Here is Hitler talking to unsuspecting German public people and seeing how they.
Yeah, respond. So here we've got him in a town square doing casual portraits and. Basically being Hitler as he does so.
And seeing how the public respond to this. There's less of that than I thought, I must say. I thought most of the film would be that. But it's maybe a third of the film, maybe a bit less. A lot of it is just the story of the re-rise of Hitler. Because it turns out Hitler is quite charismatic and says things that other people aren't prepared to say. And people respond to that.
Yeah, there's that whole thing. Well, you know, obviously I'm not a Nazi, but, you know, those immigrants.
Yes, yes. So it's... what am I trying to say? It felt like a longer film than it was, again, so it did drag a bit for me, but it shows his slow rise... through television. In fact, there are some parallels to network in the sense that once he's on TV preaching this nonsense, he suddenly becomes very popular.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of behind-the-scenes shenanigans from the... What is he? Filmmaker, basically, who's been fired from the TV station, and this is his passport back into the big time.
Yes, he's an independent filmmaker, producer, whatever you would call it, Fabian... who finds Hitler, realises... Well, does he ever realise he's the real thing? He does, actually.
He gradually does, though that doesn't really come... Well, it's... We should probably say spoilers, not that this is a very spoilable film, but there is a sequence at the end where he's shown as, you really are the real Hitler and I have to shoot you now, but this turns out to be a fantasy that's being filmed... because he's just gone mad.
Yes, because he's been incarcerated in an insane asylum. While the real Hitler does what populists do, says all the right things and does all the right things to get into power. And it, this is a comedy, like a lot of satires and black comedy. There's parts of it which you're not sure, is this supposed to be funny? What bit is this? There's some kind of, it's not out and out slapstick, but there's some out and out comedic bits. But a lot of it is just sort of dark or, oh, I can't believe that's happening.
Hmm. Yeah, it's relying on a shock value, which has perhaps diminished a bit in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I as a film from 2015, we have to remember how much things have changed in 10 years, and I actually, rather than funny, I actually found it rather depressing.
Depressing. I think, to be fair, it's meant to be.
Yes, yeah.
If insofar as this film has a message, and I think it does, it's, you know, we make all the right noises about saying Nazis bad, but in practice a whole lot of us are quite happy to support their actual policies.
Yes.
As long as they don't have a swastika on them.
Yeah, and from another aspect, it kind of humanises Hitler, not in the sense that it gives him kind of, that it's sympathetic to him, but it shows that he's not some demon. He's a human character.
And part of that fantasy sequence is him saying, you can't kill me because I'm always inside you and I'm always inside the population.
Yes. Yeah, and so it does that very well. And it is, I mean, we talked in the last episode that maybe our films were, if they were satires, and the producers may be questionable whether it's much of a satire at all, here this very clearly is a satire. You know, it really is one of those kind of, it definitely has a message. I do feel it does have this kind of, this is a warning that people like this can still exist, and will have the same hold on the population despite, as you say, despite all our feelings that we've learned from what happened in 1945, 1933, many years before that. It can still happen, and it can happen here, and it can happen again. That's just a depressing message for me.
Yeah.
at the current state of history.
At the same time, where it's trying to leaven that, I think, a bit with the TV station infighting and that side of things.
Yes. Yeah, and the just kind of fish out of water, ho-ho, Hitler doesn't know what a keyboard is, or a mouse, or, a dog's biting him, oh, he's just pulled out a gun and shot the dog. Which again comes back to
Or here are some neo-Nazis who are attacking him because they think he's mocking Hitler. And as a result, he gets sympathy from everybody else because the neo-Nazis attacked him.
Yes. It's got a lot of interesting moments. I did find, so for me, I found the kind of, here are some unsuspecting German people being faced with Hitler, saying Hitler-y things. That got a bit repetitive to me. Did you find that?
Mm. Well, that's part of the problem of the format, I think, because these are most, for the most part, just normal people who were filmed and then, you know, got consent to use them in the film afterwards. But, you know, there's no build up on this.
Yeah, it felt to me, apart from the rest of it, it's like, okay, here we have this bit that's going to be funny. It's less well integrated. Well, I mean, it works, but it's kind of Borat but Hitler. Yeah,
this is one of those things where I say that there are just bits of comedy that don't really work for me, and this is one of them.
Yeah, fair enough. I didn't find it funny. It's interesting, I guess, but then I found myself thinking about the artifice of it all, and how much is this is edited, and they were given consent, and what was left out, and it took me out of the film a bit when it got to those bits.
Yeah. And also, you know, nobody here is a particularly good person anyway, so.
Mm. Yes, it's one of those films where it's hard to root for. I think maybe this is what I felt like. It's kind of a universe that I didn't particularly enjoy spending time in. The people aren't that nice. in any...
one suspects, just all right, my experience in Germany is very limited and largely related to board gaming, but I strongly suspect that they had a bunch of people who said, no, that's a horrible thing to say, we're not interested in hearing you, go away. And there's one guy like that in a film, but that's it.
Well, that exactly touches on my point, that you see that and you think, okay, well, what proportion are we seeing here? Because obviously that would be making not the right point that the film wants to make, so now we're editing... It just got me thinking about the whole process, which took me out of it. I suppose I'm slightly running out of steam on the film because it is a bit of a one-trick pony. It does it very well.
Which makes it perhaps unfortunate that it's nearly 2 hours.
Yeah, I think, and as I said right at the start, that this is why it outstays its welcome. It sags. I think if this had been a one-hour, you know, kind of comedy documentary thing, I think it would have had much more impact, but it does feel like it stretches it out for longer than it needs to. And, well, it's making the same point over and over again, really, which I don't disagree with, but I don't need to be told it 38 times in an hour.
Yeah, and we've just, as we record this, following the German federal elections, we've got the largest party saying, yeah, we're happy to work with the AfD, who are blatantly Nazis. Yeah, what could go wrong?
Well, that leans into why I'm finding it different. I mean, the film is not wrong with its supposition. I don't think it's incorrect in saying that Hitler was just a person like everyone else, and he was just very, very good at charming people. I just find the concept depressing, so maybe I watched it at the wrong time in my life, in world history, possibly.
Yeah, though of the films we've seen so far, I think this is definitely the most authentic-looking Hitler compared with the real thing. I mean, to be fair, the other two haven't tried to be particularly. But
no, but I agree. They do actually a little downfall parody at one point, which isn't actually Hitler. There's a little bit of the producer... Mm-hmm. Banging on the table, and it's framed exactly like all those thousands of Downfall memes. We didn't watch Downfall for this because that's not a satirical Hitler. That's just a biopic, basically. I mean, this is the most satire-y of the films we've watched so far.
Yeah.
And probably has the best message, or the best, the clearest message. Maybe that's part of the problem. It clearly is trying to sell a message. I don't disagree with it. It's very well acted. You know, the Hitler actor who is Oliver Masucci?
Yeah. Who's been in quite a lot of other stuff, but again, mostly in Germany, so I haven't seen it.
It's good, but it's not a 2 hours I enjoyed spending. I didn't find the comedy that funny. And the point it made, I already agree with, so it didn't kind of convert me.
Yeah, but let me move on.
Let's move on to 2019, our final satirical Hitler film, Taika Waititi. Is that how we say his name?
I think so.
Who came to my attention in a number of ways, particularly with What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire parody, but also kind of slightly connected to Flight of the Conchords, one of my favourite comedy bands. But this is Taika Waititi doing Nazi Germany, really. This Jojo Rabbit is a 10-year-old boy in the final days of the Reich in a small city town of, I thought it was Berlin for a long time, but I think it's actually not Berlin.
No, they give it a name, but
something or other. Falkenstein, yeah. Maybe. I guess that
no, that would be a very different story.
Oh yeah, something like that. Anyway, that's my RPG roots.
No, it's Falkenheim, but this is not a real place.
Okay, but the idea, I mean, the core of this film is. This is very much from the perspective of a young boy. Consequently, all the horrors of the Third Reich and everything around are kind of painted in bright colours, and Hitler is, because this young boy's basically spent his whole life growing up with the great leader and being pumped full of propaganda. Hitler is this genius, wonderful leader who is his imaginary friend. And he goes to the Hitler Youth, partly because he legally has to, but because he enjoys, it's a club and he loves it, and he's fully taken.
Yeah, he would actually be in the Deutsches Jungvolk. I think they mentioned that.
I think
which is the Hitler Youth Junior section.
Okay, the Cubs to the Hitler Youth Scouts.
Yeah, more or less.
Okay.
Those organisations having been outlawed and replaced by.
Okay, yes. And that's the shtick, really, that we have this boy's eye perspective of the fall of the Reich. And it's done in a very, you know, we've talked a bit in every one of these films, actually, we've talked about the style, you know, in The Great Dictator, we talked about, you know, Chaplin's shtick, and then Mel Brooks and his kind of style of comedy, and then the Borat kind of style of comedy of Look Who's Back. And then this one, it's very much Taika Waititi's shtick, I think it's fair to say. And I probably wasn't as aware of that when I first watched this film a few years ago. But having seen a number of his other films, it really does feel like that kind of, not really Joss Whedon-esque, but slightly postmodern, quippy, and rather silly kind of comedy.
So I should just like point out, this is an adaptation of a book again. Mm. And in the book,
I think quite a loose adaptation, isn't
it? In the book, there is no Hitler as his imaginary friend.
Okay. Well, that
it is simply the straight story of the boy's eye perspective of these horrible things happening.
Interesting.
And so so Waititi, having got the rights, the author of the books did it end up saying, yes, it's a loose adaptation, but you know, she's not complaining about it.
She was quite happy with it. Okay, that's interesting. I'd be interested in, maybe I should give the book a read, because I would be interested in seeing the film that hadn't been sieved through Taika Waititi.
That's Caging Skies by Christine Lennon.
And is that, it's been translated into English. Oh, it's a New Zealand book, isn't it? I think, possibly.
Well, the author is New Zealand / Belgian, so as far as I know, okay. She's writing in English.
So what happens with Jojo, one, that he blows himself up with a shtick bombing, and so is kind of invalided out of the
steel hand grenade, as opposed to the A hand grenade, which is the egg hand grenade.
Okay. and injures himself to the point where he can no longer be part of the Hitler Youth.
Well, that's step two, because step one is having gone on this camp, they're trying to do the whole desensitization thing, and they require him to kill a rabbit, which he can't do.
Which, hence he gets his nickname, Jojo Rabbit. Yes, but then in trying to prove that he can be tough, he blows himself up with a stick bomb, and then is kind of reduced to sort of wandering around the town, doing odd jobs for the kind of Nazi command there. And this is very much a comedy Nazi command. I mean, the commander, as far as I can understand, or at least the local commander, is Sam Rockwell.
Mm-hmm.
Being very Sam Rockwell, I think. I mean, he's a fine actor, but he's not. He's basically being a lot very Sam Rockwell here, I feel.
The role I felt he was playing was John Barrowman as Captain Jack.
yes, exactly.
Only much more tired.
Yes, and John Barrowman and Captain Jack, after having been through the Second World War.
I do actually like the character here, because, you know, on the one hand, you've got Jojo, who is clearly fanatically devoted to Hitler and the whole Nazi cause, and it desperately wants to do something to help. And we've got this captain who has, you know, he's been there, he's seen that, he knows perfectly well that Germany is going to lose, and, you know, don't rock the boat, kid.
Except, yeah, he's no idealist, he's not going to save the world, he's just trying to get through the war, intact at this point. I'm being, when I say Sam Rockwell being Sam Rockwell, I could watch Sam Rockwell in just about anything. He is an alumnus of Ribbon of Memes. You know, we loved him in Three Billboards. We liked him a lot in Moon. We didn't necessarily love Moon, but we liked him a lot in it. And he's, you know, he's a true film star in the sense that he's very watchable, whatever he's doing.
But he's also at least a bit flexible in the roles he takes. I mean, he is often the put upon everyman, but there's variation in there as well. Compared with somebody like Jason Statham, whose work, frankly, I've often enjoyed, but he basically has one role and he plays it every time.
Yes, I noticed you used the word work rather than acting, which I think
I assume he's not like that in real life.
I wouldn't know. I've never met either him nor Sam Rockwell. Anyway, a lovely bit, but it's all played in this kind of, you know, it's a funny, what I mean by Taika Waititi is, there's like crazy visual gags, like where we have Sam Rockwell's character just saying, "No, I wanted you to get some dogs, not some actual German shepherds." And then we flick around to see four German shepherds standing in a row looking a bit disgruntled.
And I strongly suspect that doesn't actually work in German, but yeah, we're doing this in English anyway, so.
A lot of this stuff doesn't quite work contemporaneously, and so it feels a bit artificial. Jojo subsequently discovers that his mum, played by, goodness me, how far is
it? Scarlett Johansson.
Thank you, Scarlett Johansson, is harbouring a Jewish refugee in the attic. Then the story turns into a really quite sweet kind of transition of Jojo from being this brainwashed boy to, someone who realises what he's been told is not true and that he...
This starts off with his obvious first reaction is, "I need to turn this person in." But then it's made very clear to him that, you know, if you turn somebody in, well, probably the person who was harbouring them is also turned in, and that's going to take her out of the case, of the picture as well, and that just leaves you, and probably you'll be done too. So,
yes,
this is very much the collapsing regime eating itself.
It's done in very kind of 10-year-old boy terms, and there's lots of "you'll cut off my Jewish head, my Nazi head." I find it very, very charming and very sweet. You know, so he starts to write this book called, You Who Jew, about the expose on the Jewish people. He brings it to Sam Rockwell's character, who is very, Sam Rockwell about it, in that he's like, "Yeah, carry on, kid." We have a lot of comedy characters here being funny. You know, we have Rebel Wilson being this, stereotypical Nazi mistress, I guess. We have Steve.
Honestly, this is one of the few times I've seen Rebel Wilson at anything that isn't making the entire joke about her being fat.
That's true. There is not.
It's not a great role for her, but my goodness, it's better than some of the rubbish she's had.
That's true. We have Stephen Merchant, who is basically job is to be tall, but it is very good. He is very good at being tall. As a Gestapo officer, there's some jokes about Heil Hitlering, and Scarlett Johansson's very good here. You can see why she's a film star as well. This is the second time we've discussed her, because she was in Lost in Translation, which we thought she was very good there as well. We just found the overall film a bit uncomfortable.
But one of the good things about the role here is, and partly because it's seen through the eyes of her son, is she's not glamorous.
No.
And she's still obviously a beautiful woman, but as far as the Hollywood system is allowed, she's not looking pretty.
Exactly. Yes. The whole thing is shot through with I haven't mentioned Jojo's actor, Roman Griffin Davis, who I think, to me, is one of the finest child actors of any film I've seen, in that he is... Oh, Roger hates him.
I was not convinced. I kept... To be fair, I predicted that this, something like this would happen, because I kept being reminded of Stand By Me. And it's that similar... I don't know. There's something about the look and the style and the ignorance of the world, and it all just goes together to be, yes, I do remember being that sort of age, and I didn't enjoy it much, and I'm glad I'm not anymore. This is not a pleasant return to innocence for me. This is, oh, thank goodness I got out of that.
Oh, dear. Oh, Roger. We have talked about your cold black heart before, haven't we? I thought Stand By Me, you hated the kind of bullying and joshing and casual abuse that they had with each other, which doesn't sort of happen here. So
true.
I thought you might go.
He has one. Well, I mean, everybody hates him, but it's not mostly personalised, except for his one friend.
Yes, in his cardboard uniform.
It seems pretty clear, in fact, because he tells his one friend about this Jew, and shortly later the SS turn up. So that one friend clearly knows his duty and has informed on him. Nobody ever talks about this.
Oh my God, I hadn't even thought of that. Oh, he ruined the whole film for me. We also, as we haven't particularly mentioned, have Taika Waititi as Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Taika Waititi is Jewish. So once again, we have kind of a Jewish perspective on Hitler. This Hitler bears physical resemblance to society, bears no real resemblance to actual Hitler because he's, you know, an imaginary friend for a 10-year-old boy. But he often pops up as the kind of the devil on his shoulder to try and convince him to do the Reich thing rather than the right thing.
There's one oddity about that, and I don't know whether this is a deliberate thing or poor research, and it could go either way. I don't want to make assumptions, but Hitler was notoriously and fanatically anti-smoking. Yes, and yet this Hitler is always offering the kids cigarettes and lighting up himself.
Oh, that's true. Well, he was a massive, as is not uncommon with authoritarian people, a massive hypochondriac, wasn't he? And he really didn't like, yes.
I wonder, I mean, I'm speculating here, but I wonder to what extent this is a memory of the absent father.
Yes, who we know does smoke. That's a good point. Let's give the film the benefit of the doubt. Say that is confused. But I think that's a good point. I mean, the film to me delivers one of the worst cinematic gut punches I have had in a cinema. Massive spoilers.
I had heard about this before I saw it, but even so, it's
effective. So I hadn't. And so the moment, spoiler, when Jojo discovers his mother hanging from the these people are traitors to Germany. We've talked about tonal shifts before. This is the strongest tonal shift in many films that I've seen. It worked for me and really hit me hard. Because like with most good twists, I feel like you could see it coming. You know, it's not completely out of the blue. It's just the way it does it is well, you know, the way that the fact that we know those shoes are his mum, and we always know that that's a, it's kind of slowly built that up through the film so that when you see them dangling from the gallows, you know exactly what's happening. We don't need to see anything more gratuitous.
Yeah.
It worked, but I thought that was a masterful piece of filming.
Mm.
How do you feel with your cold?
It does work. It's moderately foreshadowed. You know, the SS people have come and they've gone away and everything seems fine. And then, no, it wasn't fine after all.
No, yeah, exactly. You didn't realise that she was already probably there when they came. But when you think it through, yes, it makes sense. Now I'm realising that his little friend Archie, Yorkie, informed on him. Oh. That's it.
But then the invaders arrive.
Then the invaders arrive, and then we get Sam Rockwell, his wonderful managed heroic performance of one, dressing up as an extremely flamboyant closet homosexual, because it's quite clear that he has a relationship with his subordinate with the second in command. But then he gets the chance to be a real hero by not quite sacrificing himself to save Jojo, because he was probably already going to die anyway, but accelerating his demise to make sure Jojo gets out safe.
Hmm. Meanwhile, we should say that the other strand, he's gradually been talking to, is it Elsa?
Elsa, yes.
Yeah.
Who,
and they've gradually been, well, neither of them would admit it, they have been gradually making friends, and you know, he writes fake letters from her absent fiancé to suit his mood at the time.
Yeah.
And so on. And so when he eventually gets back, he basically says, no, it's far too dangerous to go out. Germany's won the war. You're just going to have to stay here.
Because he's alone otherwise.
Yeah. But this does not last long, because let's face it, he's 10. and they finally go outside. There's an American Jeep going past. She gives him a feral slap in the face, which he accepts as, yeah, I probably deserved that.
Yes.
And then they go off into the future.
Mm. So, in this little sort of series of satirical Hitlers, again, a bit like the producers, in fact.
Oh,
sorry.
I have missed, of course, his actual dramatic inflection point. Which is Hitler is saying, no, go out there, kill that Jew or turn her in or whatever. And finally he punches imaginary Hitler out through the window.
Yes. So it's a character development story. I mean, as a narrative, I mean, I hands down enjoyed this film more than any of the others, frankly. Mm. I am on board with Taika Waititi's shtick, though a bit less so having watched Love and Thunder. And also just be more aware of his style of comedy. Though I will say Hunt for the Wilder People is very, very good, and you should watch that.
Also, it doesn't hurt it that this is 108 minutes.
It's a shorter film. It's got more. We talked about this with The Italian Job, having just watched a series of rather depressing 70s science fiction films. It's just got much more energy in it. Mm. And I would say that's a modern thing, but actually The Italian Job preceded most of the films we had watched. It pulls you along. The narrative is perhaps, I mean, it's very postmodern. It's full of little in-jokes and things that, you know, it's clear, you know, the film ends with a German version of a David Bowie song, Heroes.
Well, it starts with a German version of I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yes, exactly.
Which I think very effective in portraying the fanaticism and, you know, if Hitler showed up, there would be an instant cheering mob.
Yeah, it does this really good sort of cross-cutting of Beatlemania and Nazism. And that's really, there's a lot of energy and imagination, and it's kind of brighter and more fun to live. You know, if you're going to live in anyone's mind in 1945, maybe a 10-year-old kid is probably a better one than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it a very satisfying narrative. I was blown away by the gut punch moment, and I was shipping, in the modern parlance, the kind of not romance, it's never quite as crass to turn it into a romance as a relationship between Ilsa and Jojo.
Mm.
So as a film, I found it funnier and more satisfying than anything else we'd seen. As a satire, is it a satire? Do you think?
Well, this is where I think it's interesting to consider that the novel really isn't.
Right.
The novel plays it basically straight drama.
Okay,
so the satire is basically added by Waititi.
And in the form of Hitler isn't an imaginary friend.
Hmm.
But it's not really...
So it doesn't drive... I think the point is, since it's the plot is basically the same, the satire doesn't drive the plot. It's a side issue to the plot. And it provides, you know, here is a funny bit, and then there is the effective gut punch of the reality coming in.
But then even as a satire, it's not really... by, you know, the look who's Look Who's Back kind of standards of, look at this reality and we're going to twist it and we're just going to push it a bit further. And it's really just, this is what a kid thinks Hitler is like. And it turns out, he was wrong. And this is him learning how wrong he was. I don't know that it even really qualifies as a satire. It's not saying anything about, you know, in many ways, there's nothing about the actual horror of the Third Reich. You know, if you want that, go and watch The Pianist, which is much better, or Schindler's List, but.
I think it's interesting that although many, though not all, of the adults we see are basically quite realistic about the situation, we basically all the children are about that fanatical or more so. Yeah, clearly, yes. Clearly the others would be quite happy to kill that rabbit.
That's true. Yes.
Most of them end up in uniform.
But they're all caught up in that youthful.
Well, because it's very easy to get kids to be fans of something.
Well, I guess you're right. You know, insofar as it's a satire of anything, it's like, much like Look Who's Back, it's like, well, you know, this just seemed normal at the time, and it didn't seem like the most evil thing on the face of the planet. And yes, maybe it went to places that were regrettable, but,
Or it was at least step by step, so people could say, well, you know, I'm just doing what everybody else is doing. It's fine.
Well, I've heard this said about, you know, how did we get to the Holocaust? Well, one step at a time is how we got there, and things got normalized. And this is where I start getting depressed about our dystopian current reality.
Well, one of the things I've been saying for many years, but clearly not loudly enough, is that I think it is a mistake to treat, well, even 20 years ago, I thought it was a mistake to treat Nazism as this one-time aberration. I think it's much more important to treat it as this is what you can lure people into doing by, you know, playing on their worst natures.
And the fascist playbook is as old as time. You know, it comes from Roman. There's a reason it comes from Roman language, because they were used to that kind of. They had demagogues and they had people who played the political system, and they had, they had exactly the same problems we have now. I mean, it all worked out fine for the Roman Empire. So, Roman Empire. I mean, Roman Republic. I guess in that
let's not have a 10-minute moral drama on this, but yeah.
Well, you see, I've depressed myself into silence. But I suppose I was trying to make a broader point of what is the point of satirizing this kind of thing? What is the point of fascism? And as you say, that I think the film that gets that across to me, of all the ones we've talked about, the film that does that best for me is Look Who's Back, in that it does, you know, postulate, well, what if this guy was here now? You know, people would be aware of who Hitler was and what he did, but they'd still think, well, you know, I know, you know, he's probably just pretending. And what he's saying actually makes a kind of sense. And I think that has the most important message, which is a pretty simple message, which, as you say, you've been saying for some time now, but maybe it needs saying again a bit louder. Maybe it's too late.
Well, part of the problem is that there are certain classes of people to whom, if you give them permission to behave badly, will say, oh, thank goodness I don't have to pretend anymore, and immediately start being unpleasant to their neighbours and everybody else. So.
This is the world we live in. Yeah, it's funny how a few episodes on Satirical Hitler have got us into quite a dark.
I'm just remembering a few years ago in the late lamented pub, a chap came in, builder of some sort, I think, and spontaneously went off on a long rant about black people, uppity women, immigrants, all these things.
Mm.
There was a woman behind the bar. There weren't any black people in the pub at the time, though there sometimes were. And ended by saying, absolutely deadpan, of course you can't say that these days. He genuinely believed that he couldn't say that these days, and yet he just said it. So...
I mean, that is the suffix to which the prefix "I'm not being racist, but ...
Don't those guys smell weird? Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, it couldn't happen here, surely. Wow, that's a depressing place we've ended in.
We were going to go there eventually.
We were. So I think the point of mocking all this and making it laughable, I think the problem sometimes I have with making it funny, and I think, you know, there is a problem with the liberal left that we and I do count myself hopefully as a liberal left character, that it is very serious and very earnest, and I think there is room for comedy there. But I don't know, you know, everyone thought Hitler was funny until he wasn't. So I don't know if mocking them is just enough, but it helps.
It's a start. And apart from anything else, it really pisses them off and distracts them from the actual evil.
That's true. And that's got to be a good thing. Okay, so that's four films, all of which mocked specifically Adolf Hitler.
I should say that Look Who's Back was remade in Italy with Mussolini, though I haven't seen it.
Maybe it would work better with Mussolini. I don't know. I thought it was well done. It's funny talking it through. Honestly, I didn't massively enjoy watching Look Who's Back, but talking it through, maybe I respect it more for being clearer with its message than some of the other films. Yeah. Oh boy. Well, there we are. I don't know that I feel any of these films are masterpieces. I would watch Jojo Rabbit again.
They definitely all have things to say, but yeah.
Yes. None of them are particularly influential, I don't think. I mean, it's hard to... When we say influential, I guess we mean on later films. You could argue The Great Dictator had a part in changing the argument in America, in which case, you know, that was more influential than any other film we've talked about, probably ever, and maybe was more important than that. But it's very hard to quantify. Did that have much of an impact? How much did it...
It doesn't seem to have. I think partly because there was a lot of... Well, I mean, quite apart from the people who were on the side of Germany because they had come from Germany and not in the bad way.
Like the Drumpf family, for instance. Anyway, sorry.
There were an awful lot more people who felt that America ought to stay neutral. Mm. And they were, for the most part, the ones who had to be got over. I mean, Roosevelt at this point is quietly shoving everything to Britain that he can.
Yes.
While not actually admitting to Congress that he's doing it. So, because Congress is very much in favour of neutrality at this point.
We're going to fall down a conspiracy.
Yeah, this is not a World War II podcast. I mean, my goodness, there are too many of those already.
Yeah, but as far as a cinematic smorgasbord, I think it's fair to say it wasn't. None of them were our most enjoyable watch. I have watched Jojo Rabbit a number of times now, and I love it. But I think I just, that comedy works for me. I don't have a cold black soul as regards.
None of these is a film I love, but I don't despise any of them either.
No, I think I respect all of them. I wouldn't be in a hurry to watch most of them again. Mm. But I'm glad they exist. I think they're a sign of good humans. Charlie Chaplin possibly accepted. Well, there we are. We shall move on from dictators into something more fun, possibly even vampires, for our next episode. And we shall see you then.
Bye.
Auf Wiedersehen.